I'm curious what you were all doing for the month of July. I know that Bruce and Andrew and Corinne did a really fabulous 4th of July show here on Your Family Matters. And I just want to do a bit of housekeeping with you. I feel like I've been, you know, disconnected from you all. So let's just talk about what's been happening with our current issues regarding the family. First and foremost, this was sent to me from the American Family Association. Just need to be aware of this, and then you can do what you think is best for your family with this information. But, as you know, in the area of San Francisco, there was a representative. His name was Harvey Milk. And he has been placed on a postage stamp, national postage stamp. We can get his stamps at any of our post offices. And when I think about our stamps, you know, there's countless American heroes who have been featured on our stamps, presidents, suffragists, abolitionists, inspiring sports stars, artists, even musicians. But I believe the month of May, Harvey Milk was also placed there. And he was our first openly gay politician to run successfully for public office in California. So that's why he's being placed there. But something that you need to know as family people is that there was a book written about this gentleman. And I want to read a quote from the book, and this is what it says about Harvey Milk. It says that Milk used his charm and power to prey on young boys with emotional problems and drug addiction. He is the last person we should be featuring on a stamp. Furthermore, the radical homosexual lobby will undoubtedly encourage businesses to use these stamps, all in the name of inclusiveness, political correctness, and unity. Whatever you think about diversity, no one thinks diversity ought to include pedophilia. And I'm sure that you are indeed on board with me. According to Milk's biography, his biography is called The Mayor of Castro Street. It was written by one of his friends and also a homosexual activist, Randy Schultz. This is what Schultz says about Harvey. Harvey always had a propensity for young waifs with substance abuse problems, which is just what I read earlier, adding that Milk had a relationship with a 16-year-old boy who was looking for some kind of father figure. At 33, Milk was launching a new life, though he could hardly have imagined the unlikely direction toward which his new lover would pull him. So this is the person that we have placed on one of our stamps. So just be aware of that. I personally, we are not going to be subscribing or supporting those stamps. So let your voice be known at the post office that you do not want those stamps. Instead, buy birds, flowers, or something with one of our presidents or suffragettes on it. Let's also talk about Planned Parenthood, what's happening with them this month. Planned Parenthood is not a friend to women, despite what many may think or say. Planned Parenthood is not a friend to women or our little girls. It's a big business, and they really do push abortion no matter what. Let's talk about Planned Parenthood. They receive $1.5 million per day in public funding. That is $540.6 million in taxpayer funding last year alone. Planned Parenthood made $58.2 million last year and $383 million in profits over the last five reporting cycles. So they are big, big business. Former clinics director Abby Johnson was given an abortion quota. Now we know that Abby Johnson is actually on the pro-life side. She left her job at Planned Parenthood. She is now actually advocating and helps with the 40 Days for Life, where people are praying outside of the abortion clinics and praying for unborn life, that young girls, women would indeed choose life for their children. So again, they are not a friend. It is big business. They are making millions of dollars. Okay, let's keep moving on. Today, we are going to be talking about marriage, definition of marriage. How do you keep your marriage fresh and fun? But during this show, I would love to hear from you. We are giving away Fighting Phil's tickets again. These are Reading Fightin' Phil's tickets. Let me just share a little bit with you about the Reading Fightin' Phils. They have been the AA affiliate of the Philadelphia Phillies since 1967, the longest affiliation in all of minor league baseball. They play their home games in America's classic ballpark, First Energy Stadium. It's widely regarded as the top minor league stadium in the entire country. It's kind of like the Wrigley Field or Fenway Park of minor league baseball. Plus, they have free parking every game. Their tickets are so reasonable. So if you need more tickets than what you win today on Your Family Matters here, then you can buy tickets for $5 to $15. Free tickets for kids every Sunday. Write that down. Free tickets for your children every Sunday. It's a fabulous, fun family event. And they are playing, I believe, until September, the end of September. This is something that I personally, my husband and I, have taken the girls to go and see. Very family friendly. There's honestly not a bad seat in the stadium. We always get the $5 seats, and we can still see everything perfectly. People are so excited. You know, it is true that the parking is free. You know, if you go to see a Phillies game, I think parking can be $20, $25 now, so parking's free. You walk a couple blocks, you get to the stadium. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, they have Recycle Man there, and they're always giving a lot of free T-shirts and hot dogs, you know, shooting them out into the crowd. It's a lot of fun. So our question today is, we are giving you 10 seconds to tell us how you keep your marriage fun and fresh. And we're going to be talking about a few more ideas that I have for keeping your marriage fun and fresh and really showing your children how fabulous marriage is between one mommy and one daddy for life, how remarkable and great that is. We'll be talking more about that at the end of the show. But when I got home from my fabulous Peruvian trip, my excursion with my husband, and we went with friends, I spent a lot of time with my little girls because I shared that we did not bring them this time. It was really wonderful to have kind of a second honeymoon with my husband. I've been married 17 years. When I got home this week, we spent a lot of time with the kids. We took them to Knoebels. We went to Bushkill Falls. We did a lot of fun things. But I also got back into reading Arch books with them in the morning. I read Arch books with them in the morning. They are Bible stories. And one of the books that I read to them this week was called The Good Samaritan. And we all know the story of the Good Samaritan. We know that there was a gentleman that was beaten up by robbers. This was a parable that Jesus told in the New Testament. We know that a very devout and religious priest walked past this gentleman that had been beaten up and was laying on the roadside, and then a very religious rabbi walked past, and then who was it that showed love and grace and mercy and went above and beyond to this person lying on the side of the road but the Samaritan? And you have to recall that in that culture in the New Testament, Samaritans were looked down upon. Why? Because they were half Jewish, half Gentile. They kind of saw them as not really fitting anywhere. But it was the Samaritan that took mercy, not the super religious people. They walked right past. It was the Samaritan that stopped and saw this man lying by the roadside, his enemy, and took pity on him. And as I was reading this to my children, I have to back up and share with you what was brought to my mind and an experience that played out in the month of June for me. As you know, I've written a book, Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely. And I was asked by Brian Brown, who is the executive director of the National Organization for Marriage, if I would sponsor their March for Marriage. Basically, they are saying that marriage is best between one man and one woman. And all of the research indeed does prove that our children are best served when they are in a loving home with one man and one woman. And that is for what we were marching on June 20th. Indeed, I was able to sponsor, I was excited to do that, and I mailed a ton of books down to them that could be given out at the registration desk. But within a couple of hours of my adorable logo being on the National Organization for Marriage's website, I was getting hate mail and really being harassed and bullied. I hate to use those words, but that's what it was, by the LGBT. How did I know that that was who it was? Because I would go and see the people or the organizations who were saying these things on my Twitter account or my Facebook pages for my books. And I don't need to tell you what they were calling me, but you can use your imaginations. But one of the kinder things they were calling me was a bigot and a Nazi whore. And I don't want to go into the other things. But it really made me think about, you know, why do they view me as an enemy? And should I be viewing them as an enemy? Well, to say the least, I very quickly learned how to block certain people from my site. And certainly NAM had alerted me that the LGBT could be unrelentless with people that oppose their views. But I kept thinking, you know, I'm not Rick Santorum. I'm not Huckabee. I'm not these big people. I'm just little Carla Dedessi, who's written a couple of children's books. You know, I'm not a threat to them. But indeed, they must have seen me as a threat. I also was on many of the LGBT websites. You know, there would be an article on Santorum and how he was racist, and then there would be an article about me and how, you know, they took many things that I said out of context. So just for the record, when I was reading The Good Samaritan to my children, you know, I was just inspired to just share that as Christians, as followers of Jesus Christ, okay, we are not followers of the Pope or Billy Graham or the Presbyterian Church or the Methodist Church. As a follower of Jesus Christ, he indeed taught us to love our enemies. And I do not view the LGBT as my enemies. You know, when my husband and I lived in University City, we had a lovely homosexual couple that lived a couple doors down from us. We had them over for dinner. We did things with them. If I had neighbors now who believed a different definition of marriage, I know that I would be kind and loving to them. However, I cannot glorify what I know Christ believes is sin. And I cannot glorify what I know Christ would say to all of us who sin, turn away from your sin. So I just wanted to share that with you, that I do not view the LGBT as my enemies. I love them. And, you know, but I cannot glorify that they believe that marriage is between one man and one man, one woman and one woman. You know, my religion teaches me, and the research proves, that children are best suited in a marriage with one man and one woman. And then there was something else that also was brought to my mind, because people have been saying to me, you know, Carla, Jesus loved Mary Magdalene and she was a prostitute. And what about the woman at the well that had five husbands? Jesus was kind to her. You're absolutely correct. Let's even bring up Zacchaeus. In this dialogue, Zacchaeus was a tax collector. Tax collectors were hated in ancient Roman times because they were cheats. Maybe they needed to collect X amount for the government, but they would always collect a lot more, and then they would pocket it. They were very wealthy. They were knew to be cheats. Everybody hated the tax collectors. But when these people came to Jesus Christ, He would say to them, your sins have been forgiven. Now turn away from your sins. Yes, we are to love the sinner, but we are to turn away from our sin. And I even think about my own life, that I am not perfect and I am to turn away from my own sin. So let me just read something for you in the New Testament in John 8. This is when a woman was caught in adultery. Okay, so the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and placed her in the midst. They said to him, teacher, they're talking to Jesus Christ, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say? This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. I would love to have known what Christ wrote on the ground. The Bible does not tell us what he wrote, but I would love to have known what he wrote on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her. And once more he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus stood up and said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? She said, Lord, no one has condemned me. Christ said to her, neither do I. Go, and from now on, sin no more. Understand, Christ did not say, go and continue committing adultery. He was still saying that's wrong. You have to turn from your sin. As Christians, we need to look separate from the world. We are to be separate from the world. Is that a hard thing? Will persecution come? Will people call us bad names on our Facebook accounts and our Twitter accounts? Yes, maybe. You know what? If that is the cross that I have to bear, I welcome it and I say bring it on. As Christians, we're battling at the forefront. Christ, as well as his 12 apostles, suffered persecution. So as Christians, how can we think that we are not going to suffer persecution? So again, this little blip on my radar the last month that, I've been harassed and bullied by the LGBT for the little children's books that I'm writing that are really quite benign, and just have Bible verses that teach our children that marriage is between one man and one woman, you know, I guess this can be expected, but I certainly love my enemies, and I do not want to see anything terrible happen to them at all. In fact, I would just like them to start reading their Bibles and to just grow closer to Jesus Christ, which is my prayer for myself and all of my friends. So anyway, if you have a comment about anything that I just said, or if you'd like to share how you keep your marriage fresh and fun, I'd love to hear from you. Our call-in number is 610-539-8255. Here at WFYL, where we are working for your liberty here with Your Family Matters. Okay, something else that I would like to address with you all today is I've noticed that there's a new buzzword out there. Gwyneth Paltrow, a month ago, evidently, is going through something that she and her therapist and her husband are calling a conscious uncoupling. Have you heard about this? She's calling what most of us have called divorce. Up until a month ago, she is calling what she is experiencing a conscious uncoupling. So she and her therapist have been known to say, you know, this is really quite a positive thing. It's just two adults who are working together in a very calm fashion for the good of their children and themselves. They've identified that they no longer wish to be married, but it's a conscious thing that they're choosing to do, and they are uncoupling. So I don't know what to think about that. When I think about that, you know, I think, gosh, you know, maybe that's a positive thing for children because divorce maybe has a lot of terrible connotations that are kind of hanging on to it. But my concern is that people are going to think, ooh, Gwyneth Paltrow, conscious uncoupling. How cool is that? I'm going to have a conscious uncoupling now, you know. Sometimes we view these people whose lives are an absolute mess in Hollywood. We kind of view whatever they're doing as the hot new thing that our family, you know, all the rage that we should be, you know, emulating or copying what they're doing. So I just want you to think about why this therapist and Gwyneth are transforming this word divorce, which really is almost like a death of a marriage and death of a relationship. And it really, all of my friends who have gone through a divorce, or, you know, my grandmother went through a divorce, my mother is a product of divorce. Rarely do you find a divorce that, you know, is a positive thing for the children or for the parents. You know, I think that we have a lot of products of divorce now, who realize that committing to someone else, the benefits to that are really just priceless. And I think that we have a whole generation that really was affected by divorce. And there's just a lot of articles that, if you need me to get the names of articles to you about children, products of divorce, and the research that shows, you know, the different negative influence of divorce, I can certainly get those out to you. But I just want you to be aware that conscious uncoupling sounds very innocent, and it really is not. So that's my opinion of this, is that she's trying to kind of mask divorce or band-aid it. And in reality, you know, it's not going to be any happier. Her kids are probably missing the fact that mommy and dad live together, and that mommy and daddy share Christmas and Thanksgiving and Mother's Day together, and that they have to share households now. That's really detrimental to a family. But, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking that I have a dear friend that was on the radio last month with me. Pastor Mike Jarrell. He happens to be the senior pastor at Fellowship Bible Church, which is in the Northeast, and he has his master's degree in counseling, and he counsels quite a lot of people, and he's helped a lot of people create strong families, loving mommies and daddies who adore their children and really are a great example of marriage. And I'm wondering, you know, I want him to be our pastor on call for Your Family Matters. So we're going to try and get him on the phone right now. Corinne's in the studio with me. Can you try and get him on the phone, Corinne?
Yeah, I'm going to try to bring him up.
Okay, awesome. So we're going to see if Pastor Mike is around. If he is around, I would love to get his opinion of conscious uncoupling. And, you know, when I was on the airplane recently flying to Peru, I was reading People magazine, and, you know, that's kind of like my mind candy, my brain candy. You know, I'm always reading about, you know, civic duty books, political books, religious books, biographies about a variety of people, and I enjoy reading history. And, but, you know, I was reading through People magazine to see what's happening in pop culture, what's going on. And, you know, this coined term for divorce, conscious uncoupling, is all in these new magazines just in a month. You know, our culture is picking this up, this new term for divorce. You know, are you a conscious uncoupling? And is this something that you think would be advantageous? And again, I just think that divorce is never fun and cute. And a lot of times, you know, I know that when I saw Gwyneth interviewed a month ago, that she had said that the conscious uncoupling, because they're consciously making a decision to do this, that she and her husband have had very calm discussions about how this is going to happen, and very calm discussions about who's going to be responsible for the children. But I was also reading as of late, like a couple of weeks ago, that it really is not that bump free for the two of them. So just because you may have a prettier word for something doesn't necessarily make it a prettier experience. So I think Corinne was able to get Pastor Mike. Pastor Mike, are you with us? Pastor Mike, are you with us on the line?
I am.
Excellent. I'm glad that we were able to get in touch with you this morning. I just shared with our listeners that you are our pastor on call.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Thank you. But I was just sharing with my listeners that Gwyneth Paltrow and her husband and her therapist over the last month have coined a new term for divorce. They're calling what all of us are familiar with the definition of divorce. They're calling it conscious uncoupling. And I've noticed in some of the pop culture magazines out there that this new term, you know, Pastor Mike, how Hollywood, you know, those of us who want to emulate Hollywood and just think they're so super cool and fun, we pick up on what they're doing immediately. So in a lot of these, what I call brain candy magazines, you're actually seeing articles on conscious uncoupling. And my opinion of it, well, actually, I want to get your opinion first. So have you been following any of this conscious uncoupling? Or, like, how do you think this new term for divorce, you think it's a positive thing for the family, a negative thing for the family? What are your thoughts as a biblical counselor?
It did pique my curiosity, and I checked it out just a little bit, and it clearly is the world's way of trying to reframe the relationship that only God can ordain and that God established from the beginning. So they can use whatever euphemism they want. They're very good at that. They call the murder of babies abortion. They call them fetuses instead of babies. We homosexuals don't want you to call them that. They want you to call them gay. Gay used to mean happy. And so the world loves to just replace biblical terminology with their own. But it doesn't matter. They can do it all they want. Malachi 2, as I have my Bible here with me.
Awesome. It says,
you cover the Lord's altar with tears, with weeping and groaning because he no longer regards the offering or accepts it with favor from your hand. But you say, why does he not? Because the Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth, to whom you have been faithless, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. So God is pointing out that they have divorced each other, but in his eyes, she still is your companion and your wife by covenant. So you might find a nicer way to put a spin on it to break God's covenant than and salve your conscience, but in the eyes of God and on Judgment Day, that's not going to fly.
I really love how you tied in. I never thought that, you know, homosexuals have taken the rainbow as their sign and gay, which means happy, because you're right. They're just trying to disguise sin. And I even am talking to myself. I mean, how many times do I try to disguise I'm gossiping about someone? Oh, I'm just trying to, you know, tell my friend to pray for that person. Even I try to disguise sin in my own life.
Well, we Christians have our own euphemisms, too.
Right.
So we buy into it some as well. We call sins mistakes when they were almost always very intentional.
Right, you're right.
So we do it, too. We don't want to just trash the world when we have some guilt there as well. From what I understand, though, with the conscious uncoupling, a little part of it does address an issue that we must admit as well. So it's not good just to point out other people's sins when we Christians don't look at our own. And that is that the psychologist who coined this term was trying to find a way, because when divorces do take place, right or wrong, good or bad, they happen even to Christians. How do you deal with them? And because there's such hurt and offense They become very bitter. Children become pawns in a chess match. And the world sees the ugliness that we can't even do what's best for the kids.
Right.
So the counselor who coined this was largely trying to find a way to rephrase it and couch it in such a way that people won't be so harsh and bitter and mean and remember that they are still parenting together. And the reality is, I see it all the time as a pastor, that I can remember in my last church the screaming matches in the parking lot, because that's where one of the couples who both still came to our church after being divorced would exchange custody of the kids. And it was an ugly, ugly witness of what we Christians are supposed to be.
Right, right. You know, I have a dear friend whose parents did not divorce until she was about 24 years old. And even at that age of 24 years old, she still needed to go to counseling. And it still really pained her immensely to see that her parents' relationship was being ripped apart. And she still dislikes that she has to share, you know, the holidays. Mm-hmm. And now she has her own children. But I think that her marriage with her husband and her children is so much stronger because she doesn't want to endure, go through what her parents had to endure in their divorce. And I think that a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's better to get divorced when the kids are older. But here we had a woman who was 24 years old, and she was still highly affected emotionally by her parents' divorce, even at that older age. So
That's getting at the heart of the issue. We can call divorce lots of other different kinds of things, but the damage is still done. And God designed marriage to last. It's a picture of his relationship, his covenant with the church, which will never fail. He will never stop loving us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet to hear Gwyneth Paltrow and others, and not to be judgmental of them, but the reality is it will hurt their children. They can't keep from doing that.
Correct.
And they also said something, if I recall correctly, that the first thing that they were parents. And I think that many Christians have bought into this false teaching as well. The teaching of Scripture, Jesus reiterated it in Matthew 19, that from the beginning it was not so. He made them male and female. Let what God has put together, let no one put apart. And that no one includes the husband and the wife. But the point being that God has brought that union together, and that we're to leave our father and mother. And so one day we want our children to leave us. And our highest priority first is to God, but then to our spouse, not our children. And yet, Gwyneth Paltrow and her husband and many believers have bought into this as well. In reality, they love their children and are more committed to their children than to their spouse. So they will, here's the problem. Tell a child you love them no matter what, and they hear you say that to your spouse. But one day, you tell your spouse to get lost. How can they not think that you'll someday do the same with them?
Yes. I agree with you. I think that's such a valid point. And I think that when children see that we are not committed to that first relationship to their father or to their mother, then, as you said, are we committed to our children? Are we really an awesome mom if we hate their father? Are we really an awesome dad if we dislike and cannot get along with the mother?
Exactly.
I mean, I hate to say that, but that really is, first and foremost, you know, that's what this show is all about. We really need to protect the mother and father relationship. And I know that you've probably used the paradigm in counseling where, you know, there's a triangle and God is at the top of that triangle, and the husband and wife are at the bottom corners. And, you know, in our marriages, as we are growing closer to God, he's the first most important relationship in our lives. As we are growing closer to God, we will be growing closer to each other.
Right.
And then the children come along. But so many people do child-centered families, right? They're putting the priorities out of whack for the family.
And more often than not, child-centered families become an idolatry of themselves. We have a strange phenomenon in America. We either throw our children away or we worship them. And we haven't found the balance in between, which really, it's not even a balance. It's a reorganization of our priorities. We put God first always. So it's like a disaster scenario. Everyone should have a plan. If the power grid were to go down, and what do you do? Do we have a meeting point? And if we all know we're going to Dad's house, then from wherever you're at, you don't have to find each other. You just need to know where to go when crisis strikes. We're all meeting at Dad's house, so to speak. So if like you said, in that triangulation, I think some people get too hung up on the geometric size. But the reality is that we always go to the Lord. And if we're all going toward Him, we'll all end up at the same place. We'll be together.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We'll all have God's best interest at heart instead of my best interest or my husband having his best interest or the children's best interest. We'll have God's priorities and His goals for our family life. And then it may not be easy, but things certainly do fall into place. And the reality is that it may not be easy, Pastor Mike, but gosh, it seems so much easier than divorce and fractured families and fractured sometimes generations of families.
Right. So the world once again has reduced a covenant relationship. Before there were nations, before there were businesses, before there were careers, industries, sporting events, before there was anything, God established marriage, husbands and wives, and before there were kids.
Right. He governed
and
that.
Yes, He did. And He calls it a covenant, which is much stronger, much deeper than a contract of any other kind. And it's a matter also of integrity. So the world spins it down, whittles it down, as they do so many other things, into a byword, into a recoined phrase. But in the big picture, in the reality of it all, God says, though she is your companion and the wife of your covenant. So you might try to undo it, but let no man put apart what God has put together.
That's exactly correct. And you know, this is going a little bit off tangent, but you were really an encouragement to me and sending me wonderful Bible verses and praying for me when I was being persecuted last month by the LGBT regarding my books and just my conviction that marriage is between one man and one woman. And I had some people writing to me saying, you know, Carla, marriage was not instituted and created by God. It was something that the ancient Romans created. You know, it's not a biblical term. And I would respond back to them and say, I'm not really sure where you're getting that information. However, you know, learned people with whom I spoke and also the Bible actually talks about wife and husband and roles of wives and husbands and Adam and Eve, one man for one woman. So just in your experience, because you are a pastor, I mean, please just reiterate to us that God is the one that created and instituted marriage, correct, Pastor Mike?
Well, absolutely. Genesis chapter 2, it's right there at the beginning.
That's right.
Jesus, for those who don't want to take the literal creation view, Jesus sure took it. He didn't see a long line of cavemen and women who spit out an Adam and Eve. He shows us that we were made in the image of God and given this wonderful relationship that is mysterious and that is blessed by God. But here's the deal. Just like marriage was there from the beginning and made by God, so has historical revisionism been there from the beginning by Satan. Satan comes along and says to Adam and Eve, did God really say? And so the world, on every important issue, the issue of hell, they try to use all kinds of Greek mythology and stories, and whether it's homosexuality, and they try to tell us that The Bible's not really talking about homosexuals or committed monogamous relationships. It's talking about male prostitution. They're making it up and revising. They're just trying to tear apart the Word of God. So the real bottom line here is this. People can argue with us all day long, but where is our standard of authority? Some article that you read from some left-wing paper, or the Word of God that is infallible and yes. by which you'll be judged on Judgment Day?
Yes. Well, Pastor Mike, thank you so much for allowing us to call you. I hope that we can use you in the future, and you'll continue to be our pastor on call when we have some of these issues that we're muddling through together.
It would be my pleasure.
All right, thank you. Have an awesome day.
You too.
Okay, God bless.
Bye-bye.
We actually have someone on the phone who I believe wants to share with us how she keeps her marriage fresh and fun. Cindy, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. From where are you calling?
From Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania.
Huntington Valley, awesome.
It's like a suburb of Northeast Philadelphia.
Okay, awesome. I know exactly where it is. I grew up in Cheltenham. Now, how many years have you been married?
10 years.
Awesome. So can you tell us what keeps your marriage fresh and fun?
Well, some of the things that I was thinking about, it's easy to communicate these days in many different ways. And so I take advantage of that. And I think it's really the little cute things that you do for your husband that keeps him happy and keeps things fresh. I'll text him not to say what should I get at the grocery store, but I might say, I'm thinking about you. I can't wait to see you tonight. Or I'll send him an email, and the email won't be business-like. It will be a cute email, a loving email. Or if I'm ever passing his school, because we're both teachers and I teach near him, I leave a note on his windshield.
That's so cute.
Yeah, like just little things like that. And we make time for each other. We do have 3 children, and 1 is still 9, and you can tend to get wrapped up in just catering to the child, but we really try not to do that, and my husband really does too. And every single night, no matter how tired we are, after he prays with our son and puts him to bed, we watch a show. And, we just take that time together. We find shows that we both are interested in, and we're not in 2 separate rooms. We're in the same room, on the same sofa, talking about it and watching it together. And, no matter what's going on, that's what we do. And I just think it's important because, hey, we can't go out. We have a kid in bed.
Yeah.
We can't do things. We're saving money for college for the other kids, And this is what we do. And we're very happy. I mean, we have a really, really nice, happy, God-blessed marriage.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And, my husband works 2 minutes from our house, and I feel like I should go and find his car today and put a note on it. So thank you.
Yes, you should.
And we're going to
lipstick and put a little kiss on it.
I will. I will do that. I'll put red lipstick on. Now, I'm going to send you 6 Reading Phillies tickets. Thank you so much for coming in, and I hope that you can enjoy a family night out.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
So that was a really great mom, great wife. I'm glad that she called in. And I would like to share a few things that I think can keep our family strong. So remember, we just talked about husbands and wives. Yes, it's important to have fabulous relationships with our children, but if we do not have great relationships with their mother or their father, we are not giving them our best. So, my husband and I went to counseling before we even walked down the aisle together. At our church, they had something called the Right Start. And for, I think, 6 months before we got married, we would go every Sunday afternoon, and we had this big 3-ring binder that we would go through, and we had mentors, and once a month we would meet with our mentors and just go to their house and see what it was like to be married and how they spoke with each other, and they were teamwork and partners. Because although I was blessed to have a mother and father who have been married for 47 years and adore each other and have a really super strong marriage, thank the Lord, let's face it, 51% of us are a product of divorces today. So we may not have good marriage role models from which to learn. So, you know, I am just urging you to all of that time you put into running the Ironman or the marathon or the warrior dashes, or all that time that you throw into making your business so successful, or all that time that you put into working on the basement and finishing it, work on your marriage. You know, once a week we plan to go, or actually people put on their schedule that they jog 5 times a week or they go to the gym 3 times a week. Put on your calendar once a week that you have a date with your spouse. Even if it is going to coffee, even if it is running together in the morning. If you have little children, then you put them to bed early one night and you make sure that you have a date night, kind of what Cindy just said, watch a movie together. But do not take the relationship with your husband or wife for granted. You're going to be miserable in the end, as will your children. So here are some ideas. Cindy had some awesome ideas of just texting each other, emailing each other, and instead of saying, what time are you going to be home tonight, say, I miss you, or put XOXOXO across there. What I do, and I don't do it enough for my husband, but we have these Crayola window markers. So once a week, I'll write up on Lenny's, on my husband's mirror in the bathroom, because I know that he'll say it there in the morning, I love you. Or XOXO, or I'll even put an inspirational Bible verse, or I think you're doing a fabulous job, you know, something uplifting. But it's so easy to do if your kids have those Crayola markers, or even a dry erase marker, probably I'll do the same thing. Another thing that I just collected a ton of pictures for, because I want to show my children that marriage between one man and one woman is really important. So, you know, a ton of my friends have really strong marriages. Thank the Lord, a ton of my family members have really strong marriages. So my kids do have a lot of role models around them, but I'm doing a wedding wall in my house. I'm going to have great grandparents so that my kids can see one man and one woman, the beautiful gown, you know, it's very serious. This isn't a joke. You don't marry someone, you know, without really praying about it and talking to your whole family about it. Like, this is a lifetime decision. So doing a wedding wall in your house, or just taking out your wedding album and sharing with your kids, you know, God's definition for marriage is one man and one woman. Don't joke or jest or tease about your marriage. Oh, she's my old ball and chain. You know, really talk uplifting about your wife or your husband so that your children hear that you love their mommy or you love their daddy. So those are just a few things that I jotted down on my way into the studio today, just to put marriage first and foremost. Let's turn those statistics around. Let's not make it be 51% divorce anymore. Let's drop it down. Our generation can do that. I'd like to play something by my favorite comedian, Tim Hawkins, his Chick-fil-A song. I adore this song, and I've had a couple of dates with my husband at Chick-fil-A, believe it or not. While the kids are playing in the nice, clean, and safe area, my husband are reconnecting. So I just thought that this was an appropriate song to leave you with this weekend.
Chick-fil-A. I could eat there 7 times a day, where the people laugh and children play. Oh, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A. Suddenly, I need waffle fries in front of me, with some nuggets and a large sweet tea. Oh, Chick-fil-A, you set me free. Kids, get in the van so we can go there today. But their stores are closed, oh I know, 'cause it's Sunday. Chick-fil-A. What a dirty, rotten trick to play. Now I have to settle for Subway. Oh, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A.
Gosh, that makes me want to go and get waffle fries and a lemonade, and I adore their hand-spun milkshakes. That's definitely where I'm heading right after this show with my little girls. I brought my little girls into the studio with me today. So my prayer for you until I meet with you next week is that you really concentrate on your marriages this week, that you really make marriage look as marvelous as it can be and as God wants it to be. Really spend time praying with your husbands, reading the Bible with your husband, doing fun things, going for jogs, joking, laughing with your husband. And you know, I'm encouraging myself in this as well, because I tend to be very type A. My husband walks in the door and I'm like, I got this done, this done, this done, this done. What do you need to tell me today? And you know, I think he would be shocked if he walked in tonight and I just tease him, joke around, and just bring back that loving feeling, people. So thank you for joining me today on Your Family Matters. I'm Carla Dedesi. This is 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty.
PAFamily.org.
Hey, I thought you and the boys were doing some environmental cleanup thing today.
We are.
Well, it looks more like you're going fishing.
We are.
And that's the example you're setting for our children.
Uh-huh.
Every time you purchase a fishing license or register your boat, you're helping to preserve our nation's lakes, rivers, and streams, protecting memories.